from regular hand washing to sterilized bottles, antibiotics to antibacterial soaps, we have done a lot to keep our kids as germ-free as possible.
Our next guest says there have been a lot of benefits from modern hygiene, but we often take things too far. Instead of treating microbes as the enemy, more and more scientific evidence points toward the benefits of the bacteria that live among us and inside of us. And if we try too hard to wipe out the bad stuff, we can lose the benefits of the good stuff.
Marie Claire Arrieta joins us now. She's a microbiologist and assistant professor at the University of Calgary, and she's the co-author of the new book, Let Them Eat Dirt: Saving Your Child from an Over-Sanitized World. Marie Claire, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it seems like there's this big attitude change toward microbes, where a lot of us, at least in the popular culture, thought of them as the enemy, something to be eradicated as much as possible, to seeing them as providing a lot of benefits, being important to who we are and how we come into being.
That's right. So all microbes cannot be put under the same umbrella. Rightly so, some of them are, you know, to be feared because they cause very dangerous in infections. But we live in most industrialized countries and in societies that expose us to a very reduced risk for these infections, thanks to hygiene measures, thanks to vaccines, and thanks to antibiotics. And all of these are wonderful ways of reducing the risk of disease. But I think we've gone too far, as you were saying before in the introduction. Microbes also are part of who we are. And this is a new side of microbes that we didn't know about until up to about 10 years ago. They really are part of our bodies. We rely on microbes, especially as children, to perform essential tasks for our development, like the maturation of our immune system, regulating how we spend energy, how we store fats, like really important stuff that we cannot do without microbes.
A lot of what you're writing seems to be a good news, bad news story. I mean, the good news is sanitation, hygiene, antibiotics have helped stop a lot of really horrible diseases in industrial countries anyway. But along with that, because of some of what we've done to the good microbes, you write that we're seeing rises in asthma, in autoimmune disorders. Can you talk about some of the consequences there?
Yeah. So basically, since we realized that microbes perform such important tasks for our immune system and our metabolism early on, what happens is if we miss out or we deplete this exposure of microbes early on, we do not get the proper training necessary for our immune system or our metabolism. So there's study after study showing that if you receive antibiotics during the first year of life or even during the late phases of pregnancy, that very strongly associates with a baby later on going to develop asthma, allergies, obesity, diabetes, autoimmune disease, many different diseases, all associated to these changes in what we call the microbiome or this community of microbes in early life. Along with antibiotic use is, for example, a C-section. We never thought of a C-section being as detrimental for health, but it happens that when we're born via C-section, we miss out on that first bath of microbes that normally we would obtain through vaginal and fecal secretions during a vaginal birth. So just by being born via C-section, that increases the chances between 15% to 30% of developing asthma and allergies.
One thing that makes it hard to talk about this, I think, is you're making the case that we've gone too far, but you're also trying to say we can't overcorrect and go in the other direction. We don't want to completely throw away the antibiotics or the hand washing or C-sections for that matter are sometimes medically necessary.
They are. And, we can be, we have to be realistic, right? We live in a modern society. And vaccines, this is such an important point to make because vaccines is one of the only public health measures that we have to prevent some of the worst infections. And without vaccines, they will come back, as it has happened in countries where vaccinations rates have gone down. So we depend on these types of measures to try and prevent some of the most dangerous diseases. With antibiotics, they're a little bit of a double-edged sword because we need them. If we have a bad bacterial infection, there's no way around it. We have to take them. But we really need to restrict their use. Antibiotics are nowadays overused overused and abused, and one should never push a family doctor to give a child an antibiotic, because they do come with side effects. But at the end of the day, what we try to do with the book is to provide information to reach this balance as much as we can between disease prevention and also what we consider a healthy exposure to microbes.
We're talking to Marie-Claire Arrieta. She's co-author of the new book, Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Over-Sanitized World, talking about kids and germs. And germs are not a dirty word anymore for kids. Marie-Claire, as you were just saying, a lot of your book is aimed at practical advice for parents in particular. I want to get into some of that. Let's talk about how much we should let kids get dirty and go out in the world and put things in their mouths. So one time at a restaurant bar in town, one of my kids, who was then two, we saw she was eating a pickle. She didn't have a pickle. We asked where she got it. It was from the floor. As a parent, I feel some revulsion there. But maybe that wasn't a good example. But maybe we need to not freak out so much when kids are out there exploring the world.
Yeah, it's hard not to freak out. I have two young children, and yeah, you get freaked out. The important thing is to understand that not all dirt is equal. So, yes, if you're out in a public space where there's lots of people and you see your child picking something from the ground and putting it in the mouth, it's not a really good idea. There's lots of people there, and whenever there's a high concentration of people, the risk of diseases goes up. But if your child is out in the park or out in the countryside or in your own home, the risk of disease, of contracting a disease, really goes down. So you really can let that go, and it's fine to have your child put something in his or her mouth or to play with dirt. But there's some areas where you have to be a bit careful, you know, a subway station, a crowded mall, those types of things. I think it's important to teach them, you know, do not lick the floor in those places, or wash your hands after you've been playing in the subway floor, if that ever happened, and especially to do it before you eat and after you use the washroom.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about hand washing. It's easy. I certainly get a little, not obsessive about it, but I wash my hands a lot. Where's the right line to draw for kids?
Well, with hand washing, the good is that it's a practice that has been studied really, really well for decades. So we know when it's effective and when it really doesn't make a difference. And it is before we make food and before we eat, after we use the restroom, if we have been in contact with anyone that is sick, if we ourselves are sick to try and prevent other people from getting sick, or if we, for whatever reason, have been in contact with animal waste or with anything that is decomposing. Beyond that, hand washing makes no difference in terms of disease prevention. We know now that we do not need to wash ourselves with antibacterial soap. It's no more effective, and in fact, the FDA just did something really good at banning some of the chemicals that are most common in antimicrobial products. They're really not good for you, and they're not really effective in preventing disease. They do have a place, for example, if you're camping and you do not have a good source of water. But other than that, plain old school soap and water is what you need during those times that I just mentioned.
Yeah, you mentioned antibacterial soap. How about those hand sanitizers? Purell is the brand a lot of people encounter, those alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Are those maybe overkill?
Completely. We do not need them. And again, they don't really work in preventing disease if you continuously use them. We should just aim for regular soap and water. I think anything beyond that is totally over-sanitizing ourselves. And you see them everywhere. Now I have kids in school, and you kind of see them hanging from every other backpack. The same thing with diaper bags. You see them everywhere. There's this idea that the more you clean yourself, the safer you are, when that's just not the case, according to science. So we don't need them, again, unless we're camping or if we're caring for someone that's sick or if we're in a hospital. But for our everyday living, we do not need them.
And we've been talking a lot about what not to do. Let's talk about some more positive things. Let's talk about food. Are there foods that parents can keep in mind to promote healthy gut bacteria in particular?
Yes. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good exposure your kids have with microbes. If you don't feed those microbes the right things, they're going to end up dying anyway. And that's one of the, I call it, crises. that we have in modern society, and it is the type of food that we feed our microbes. Microbes rely on our fiber intake to thrive in our gut. And we nowadays live in a pretty fiber-depleted world. So think about feeding your kids fibers in you know, natural occurring forms, vegetables and fruits in every single meal, including snacks and breakfast, as well as substituting all the refined grains like rice and wheat with the whole variety. So using brown rice and using whole wheat. And if you substitute all your refined grains for the whole variety, you're already increasing the fiber intake by a ton. So you don't really need to be eating bran cereal all day to eat a good amount of fiber. You just need to you know, eat it throughout the day in the natural occurring forms. So that's the best thing that you can do. And also, supplementing with fermented foods, so yogurt, the ones that have live microbes in it, kefir, sauerkraut, pickled vegetables, all those are good.
We're talking about microbes and kids. Our guest is Marie-Claire Arrieta. She says we've gone too far in our quest to sanitize the world that our children live in. She's the co-author of the new book, Let Them Eat Dirt.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How do you handle cleanliness for your kids? And what were things like when you grew up? How much hand washing do you require for your kids? And how dirty do you let them get? Do you think maybe we've gone too far in keeping things clean? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now with microbiologist Marie-Claire Arrieta, and we're looking at her new book, Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Over-Sanitized World.
And you could join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you super zealous about hand washing and hygiene in your household? Do your kids have opportunities to get dirty? How are things different now compared to your own childhood? Call 800-642-1234. 1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers now. Paul is on the line in White River. Paul, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Paul?
I wanted to say how wonderful this program is. In my life and my people, we have never stressed or focused on microbes or germs. We don't even have a word for them. And I think that it's very important to eat things that are that wouldn't be sanitized. And I think native peoples have always known this, and it wasn't until Europeans came here with the idea of cleanliness or their science that they ruined the natural state of things. We bury salmon heads in the ground until they ferment, and we eat them. The salmon head, the cheeks and the forehead and all that, the salmon, and they're very good. And I just think it's another example of how bad science and bad technology from the Europeans have ruined a good life that we had.
Paul, thanks a lot for that call. And Marie-Claire, do we see lessons from native cultures, maybe other cultures, where we could learn a thing or two?
Well, it's interesting. Well, to my knowledge, there hasn't been epidemiological studies done, particularly in Native American communities. But there have been plenty of studies done in areas of the world that still keep, you know, traditional form of living, and that they haven't seen the same level of industrialization like we do here in North America or in Europe. And what we see over there is interesting, because what we see is that in places in North Africa, for example, people are still suffering from dangerous infections because, you know, they're not following the same hygiene measures that we do. But interestingly, they do not have the same rates of immune and metabolic diseases that I was talking about before. So it seems that it's either one or the other, depending on where you look at the world, what we think is that ideally, in this part of the world, we can regain, or we are at least hopeful that we can regain that balance in which you can prevent dangerous disease. You do not need to get, you know, dangerous infections, while at the same time, you can harvest a diverse and a strong microbiome. So we don't think it's one or the other.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Jacqueline on the line in Sturgeon Bay. Jacqueline, hi.
Hi there. My question is, why has it taken so long for this to come to the forefront of the public eye? My daughter, 14 years ago, went to the University of Minnesota in microbiology, and she at that time told me to quit using antibacterial soaps and cleaners because it didn't do what they were supposed to be doing, and it was actually, you know, less beneficial to us to be using it. And so if it's that big of an issue, why is it taking so long for people to understand this?
Jacqueline, thanks. Marie Claire, we've been figuring this out about antibacterials for a while now, she says.
Yeah. That's a great question, and it comes down to advances in technology. So it's until very recently that we really understand how critical microbes are to our physiology. They're involved in our behavior, for example. They're involved in how we burn fat, how we store it, and, of course, in the maturation of our immune system. I think before then we thought that they had a role, but we had no idea that it was so important. So I think it's that knowledge that was obtained through advances in technology. Microbiologists like myself, for the longest time, we were only able to study microbes by growing them. And there's only a very small proportion of microbes that grow in the lab. Of all the gut microbes that we have inside of us, about only 10% grow normally in the lab. The rest, we really had no idea, but now we can sequence them. And it's through sequencing that we've really understood how biodiverse is our microbial community in our gut, and that has changed things.
We're talking to Marie Claire Arrieta, author of the new book, co-author of the new book, Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Over-Sanitized World. Before we go back to our callers, Marie Claire, talking about how information gets out there, you talk a little bit in the book about media coverage of issues of microbes and things like that, and it doesn't always steer us in the right direction. What do you think is out there?
Well, there's a little bit of everything. I mean, there's some studies that are interpreted the right way. There's some, you know, good science journalists that wouldn't interpret a study as it is. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And at the end of the day, someone that may not have a background in science, it's reading all this information without knowing how to interpret a sometimes pretty complicated study. And that was one of the drivers for us to say, you know what, let's try and synthesize some of the best studies in this field and put it in lay terms for the general audience.
Back to our callers now. Ben is with us in Madison. Ben, hi.
Hello, thanks for having me on. Say, Maria, I wonder if you would mention briefly helminthic therapy and how that's being used in the West in a limited fashion, partly because the FDA and the medical establishment is conservative, and not in a good way, but in a way that ultimately risks people's health. But what helminthic therapy is and how effective it can be for conditions like Crohn's, and also how that ties back into the hygiene hypothesis.
Marie Claire, I'm not sure what helminthic therapy is, first of all.
Yeah, so helminths are worms, and they belong to that big group of microbes that live inside of them. And just like with bacteria, there's some, you know, worms that will cause disease, and there's some that don't. Helminths, or these worms, they are known to really modulate or change the way our immune system behaves. The issue with helminthic therapy, as the caller was pointing out, there's some studies saying that it can be used to treat allergic diseases such as asthma or inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's disease. But the literature is a bit what we call noisy. There's some studies saying that it works. There's some studies saying that it does not work. Kind of like the same with probiotics. Probiotics, there's some studies that says that they work and some studies that says that they do not work. The FDA, and of course, they have to wait for the evidence to be sounding enough to recommend such a practice. But there's definitely lots of laboratory groups that are studying helminthic therapy. But I wouldn't go as far as to recommend it just because we do not have enough evidence to say, okay, this is definitely working. I think we might get there, but we need a little bit more time.
Ben, thanks for that call. Marie-Claire, it sounds like in some ways we're standing on the frontier of something that could be really earth-shaking in the way we treat a lot of conditions. We're not there yet. Can you talk about some of the potential future for a microbiome, therapy, treatment?
Yeah, and you're spot on. We're at the verge of that. This is really groundbreaking science. Again, we didn't know much about this until about a decade ago. But there's a lot going on. So there's huge deals in the pharmaceutical industry, multi-million deals to study different therapies based on the microbiome. So they're studying what they call next generation probiotics. So these are not the probiotics that we find now in natural health stores or in your yogurt. These are species of bacteria that normally we cannot grow in the lab, but we're finding ways of doing so, and we're trying to package them or formulate them to treat disease in kind of like the same way a drug treats disease, and study them and market them that way as well. So there's a huge, huge potential. Research-wise, there's a lot of research dollars that are being devoted to the microbiome field. It's a very exciting field to be in.
We'll leave it there for now. Marie-Claire, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Marie-Claire Arrieta. She's a microbiologist and assistant professor at the University of Calgary. We've been talking about this new book she's co-author of. It's called Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Over-Sanitized World. Some of the lessons, more fiber, more fermented food. Don't worry so much about getting dirty. You can share some of your thoughts and find a little more out about the book over at the Central Time Facebook page.